Welcome to Police for Reform, the podcast of Law Enforcement Action Partnership. You can learn more at policeforreform.com. I'm Russ Belville, and on this podcast, we'll be visiting with various speakers from Law Enforcement Action Partnership, people who have spent their days in law enforcement through being police officers, being prison guards, being prosecuting attorneys, defense attorneys. All aspects are involved in Law Enforcement Action Partnership. And joining us today, we have former detective and deputy sheriff Nick Morrow from Seal Beach, California. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's interesting to speak to law enforcement people who have been working in California, being that's been the hotbed of so much activism in marijuana law reform and drug law reform in general. And I was wondering if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about your background. When did you get started in law enforcement?
I got hired by the LA County Sheriff's Department in 1983 and worked a variety of assignments there, including custody that, you know, all deputy sheriffs work, LA County deputy sheriffs go through. So I worked a custody assignment, patrol assignments. I worked detective assignments, station narcotics investigator, that type of thing. And then training assignments. I taught at the academy off and on subjects about, drug use, drug trafficking, that kind of thing. And so it's kind of a broad base. I had a lot of opportunities in my career. I got assigned. I worked in, sleepy little Catalina Island for a couple of years, and that assignment allowed me the access to training that most other deputy sheriffs don't get a chance to access till later on in their careers. So I was very fortunate there, and just kind of a well-rounded approach to law enforcement in general.
You were hired on by LA County in 1983. How long were you in law enforcement?
Just about 11 years, and so I retired in 1994 out of a due to a service-connected disability. I messed up my back during an arrest of a drunk, and a couple of years of trying rehab and all that kind of stuff led to a retirement from the Sheriff's Department.
So given that time span, then, you must have been involved with the LA County Sheriff's during the time of the Los Angeles riots. People are recognizing the 25th anniversary of that event. Can you give us your perspective, what it was like for law enforcement at that time, and maybe how the war on drugs impacts this relationship between communities and the police?
Yeah, the relationship between the people that are being policed and the officers and deputy sheriffs that are doing the policing it's always a contentious one at some level or another. Nobody likes to be looked after. Nobody likes to be, called on their stuff, for lack of a better word. So you always have that tension that's there, and a lot of people try to explain it in a very simple fashion. And, there's social issues, there's economic issues, there's racial issues, who deals with who and, where they are. there are a lot of issues that pop up into making that an incredibly complex thing to figure out. As far as the riots were considered, the tensions were on every aspect were high until, the people that were being policed, the people that were being looked after by law enforcement, there's that not guilty verdict, that pops up at a time where the entire LA basin was a powder keg, and that's all it took to set it off. And if you go back into time, even further back, the Watts riots, a minor incident set it off. And, that's the type of thing. And then we try to blame it on one faction or another. Cops are bad. Gangsters were at the root of it. And, we're playing the blame game on every one of these social issues. And when smarter people than both of us need to figure out what really, what really produced the powder keg environment that existed, and it still exists. Like I said with Ferguson and other police involved shootings, we now have body cam footage that now everybody believes that they're there and they saw it and they know exactly what was going through the minds of the people that were there. But, you know, the body cams are, you know, they're just a tool. And so, you know, smarter people than us need to be able to interpret those and, you know, come to the conclusion of what the real issue is and what really happened on a lot of individual circumstances. So it's not going to get any easier anytime soon. And, you know, the access to the social media and everybody has a video camera in their hand now, you know, that's so there's going to be less and less unknown about a lot of these incidences. So, you know, that it's cautious optimism on my part that, okay, great, we're going to change the way we work as police officers, and the public is going to change the way they interpret police officers, and maybe somehow we're going to come together in the middle someplace.
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of parallel in that the Rodney King verdicts were spurned, you know, the riot spurned off of that was because of videotape that showed the actions of the officers in the beating. And now we have the Walter Scott case and other cases where we see video, and people oftentimes say that it's now only because the cameras are showing this, that it's happening, that anything is being done about it. In law enforcement, there seems to be a code of silence, or people, you know, closing ranks for their own rather than seeking out the justice that the people deserve in these sort of situations. In looking back to the 92 riots compared to what's going on today, what sort of reforms in policing have been attempted, are being attempted? What's going to make a difference in your view with your experience?
Well, all of this is an evolution. I worked in LA County Jail, the inmate reception center. So I was, you know, involved in you know, a lot of the people going back and forth to court, a lot of the housing issues, a lot of the segregation issues that were in there. And when I worked there, I believe the LA County Central Jail was designed for 5,000 or 6,000 inmates. And at the time there was I think the census was closer to 10,000. We had people jammed in a small space. We had people sleeping on mattresses and shower rooms and things like that. It was an incredibly violent place. And on one hand, it really had to be to maintain control over an incredibly crowded environment. You know, so there were fights every night. There were, you know, there was abuses that came up, you know, depending on what side of the fence you were on. And it was a very dangerous place for the officers that worked there. You know, so you had to be on your toes, you know, 24 hours a day kind of thing. But, you know, because of things that happened during that time, because of allegations, because of incidents, because of, you know, any one of a number of incidents, riots in the jail, that type of thing. You know, we moved towards having outside people look at that. And the Sheriff's Department, you know, there was, I think, the Christopher Commission and the Colts Commission. They issued reports about how the jails were being run and how, you know, certain things that needed to be done. As a guy that was there at the time when all these things were happening, you know, I think, in one part of my mind, welcome that scrutiny that, you know, we really needed, you know, those reforms needed to happen. And, you know, things have improved there since then, despite people wanting to discount the fact that things are just as bad as they've always been. They've improved because, you know, it was really bad. Now it's not as bad. This process still needs to keep going. So law enforcement needs to keep looking at themselves because, you know, plain and simple, we're given the constitutional ability to do a lot of stuff. And, you know, we have a lot more power than maybe the average person realizes. You know, how long does it take the state to put somebody to death? Probably a decade in most cases. How long does it take a deputy sheriff or a police officer on the street to decide whether or not he needs to shoot and kill somebody? Less than a second and a half. You know, so the people with that kind of power, that kind of responsibility, you know, on one hand, they need to be given a little bit of leeway to be human beings. And then on the other hand, they need to be really, really well trained and well disciplined to do their jobs without doing something, you know, incredibly tragic. And so, you know, there is a you know, it's a two-sided issue. You know, I've talked to a lot of people, you know, how do I deal with police officers in the field? I get that question a lot. And, you know, I keep telling them, I go, you know, there's a lot of really good things that a police officer does. And when I got the job, when I applied for, you know, the Sheriff's Department in L.A., I was already an EMT. I worked in an ambulance crew. You know, I was interested in taking care of people. That was what I liked to do. I was impressed with law enforcement. I wanted to be a part of it. And when I got in there, I learned in the academy, you know, you learn first aid and CPR. You learn traffic safety, crime suppression, all the procedures for law enforcement. You know, I mean, everything under the sun to benefit your community. And so we're trained to do a ton of things that are beneficial to our community. But at the same time, we're also taught that there are people involved in your community that are looking for any reason to kill you. And cops don't wear bulletproof vests because we're afraid of each other. We wear bulletproof vests because we're afraid of you. We carry extra bullets and handcuffs and all that kind of stuff. And we take training in defensive tactics and all that kind of stuff. And if you think about it from your perspective, all the things that I'm trained to do, I've learned, I'm proficient with firearms and I have access to firearms and that kind of thing. If I looked you in the eye and told you I'm going to kill you, you have my face that you're going to recognize, and you're going to be afraid of me for what I'm capable of. And you have to be lucky every day of your life. I just have to be lucky once. And so if you think about it to yourself, how would you change the way that you deal? How would you change your life to deal with a threat like me? And, you know, I mean, the quick answer is, well, you know, you'd peek outside, you'd be, you know, you'd look around the corner and all that kind of stuff. So when you put the shoe on the other foot with me, I'm told that there's a portion of my community that doesn't like me, that was given an opportunity, will kill me. You know, how do you end up changing your life to deal with that massive threat? You know, so it's, you know, like I said, if you have one person threatening you, you have one person to deal with. In my case, I have 1,000 out there that at any one given time, every car I walk up to might be the car. And so, you know, it's kind of like it's a two-way street. And what I'm getting at is the citizen on the street has to realize what the law enforcement officer is going through and what their responsibilities are. And the law enforcement officer has to realize exactly the opposite. So we're responsible for each other's safety. You know, as a driver on the street, if I get pulled over, it falls on me not to do anything stupid that's going to make that officer panic. And as an officer, you know, I'm not going to allow a person in a car who I don't know, who I've never met before, do something that may or may not result in me getting hurt. And so, you know, the responsibility falls on both of us. And that's just in an individual contact. And then when you start talking about, you know, citywide, countywide, statewide kind of policies, we all are responsible for making it as safe as it possibly can be for law enforcement to do their job, which is vitally important. You know, one of the questions I always ask is, you know, well, okay, if you're not going to call a cop, who are you going to call? Local gang member, meth dealer, you know, who's going to solve your problems for you? And so, you know, I never really get a good answer out of that one.
Well, Nick Morrow, we appreciate taking a nuanced look at all of these issues involving policing in the communities, and your experience is definitely useful in that discussion. We appreciate you joining us here on Police for Reform.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.